This special adventure that takes us back to the year 1955. I've had the pleasure of knowing this man for a number of years, and it's indeed a pleasure to know this man.
Oh, it absolutely is, Jim.
I don't really, if you want to put, you know, if you're having a bad day, run across Art Asquith. He'll turn it into a good day.
Well, some of the opposing pitchers didn't think it was a very good day, but if he had a bat in his hand, it wasn't a good day for somebody.
Well, he's a talented athlete, but he had a wonderful adventure on a famous TV show in 1955, and I have begged Art Asquith to tell us that story on the Times of Your Life, because as we know, Russ, we go back and all our guests in the past have had great adventures in one way or another. But for a man locally to have made an appearance on one of the most popular TV shows in that era, Art Asquith and another man, a friend of his named Hal Sander, appeared on What's My Line. Art Asquith, welcome to the Times of Your Life.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks, Russ.
Well, Arthur, you know, I've asked you many times, and I told Russ, I'm going to do all I can to get Art on this show because, you know, how many in a lifetime make an appearance on a nationally famous quiz show. And What's My Line was one of the most popular in the 50s. So give us a little background of how that adventure came about.
Well, back in the 50s, Jim, as a college student, you know, we needed something to do during the summer, pick up a little extra cash. And I was a freshman or sophomore at Ithaca College, and my friend Hal Sander was a sophomore, junior or something at Wayne University in Detroit. And every summer, you know, we went home and tried to find something to do. And actually what happened to me was my brother Russ was painting the trail signs down at Allegheny State Park, those ones with the silver and black letters and the forest green background. And he took off for bigger and greater things, and they offered the job to me, and I accepted. Only to find out that the studio they sucked me into paint was down in the cellar of the ad building, but right in front of me was a window that looked out on the beach, and all I could see all day long was these young gals running around in bikinis and everybody having a good time down there, and I'm saying, what in the world am I doing stuck in this basement? And lo and behold, about, several weeks after I'd been there, an opening came to be in the garbage crew,
and out of the basement.
And one of the rangers, I knew all the rangers, and they used to come down and take their lunch break every now and then with me because it was nice and cool down there. And said, "You wouldn't be interested in being a garbage man, would you?" And I said, "If it's going to get me out of here and around the park, that's great." And so it happened that you know, I took the job, and my buddy Sanders was also looking for a job, and the chief ranger down there said, "We need another guy. Do you know anybody that might be interested?" And so I got my buddy Hal Sanders, and we decided to do the job.
You became the garbage man.
Yeah, we became.
But then you were known as the G-man.
Well, what happened was, both you guys are kind of my vintage, you know what a big hit the Mills Brothers were at that time, and. Mm-hmm. Funny, but back in those days, I think it was okay for young guys and young athletes to sing, get together and harmonize and at bonfires and wiener roasts and so forth. It was okay to have a barbershop or any reasonable facsimile, you know, and you sang all the popular tunes, oftentimes three-part, two-part. Sometimes if you had some talented people, you even had four-part harmony, and it didn't make any difference if it was good or not. You had fun. But we were big Mills Brothers fans, and we started just, I think, by accident. As we made our rounds in the park, people would come out and maybe to help us with our load or get rid of their load or something, and we'd just talking and shooting the breeze, and the first thing you know, somebody would start to sing or something, and all of a sudden it got to be a routine. We started doing a lot of two-part harmony sessions all around the trails of the park, and of course, you see, that's the one thing about that garbage truck. It got me out of the basement and onto every trail in that park, and that was great, and the ad building and the beach included, so it was a good deal.
I've heard about whistle while you work, but I've never heard about sing while you pick up your garbage.
Well, funny as it sounds, we did a good job, too. We took the job seriously, and we picked up everything and didn't leave anything around. But what happened was, because we were having such a good time and it got the attention of a few people, all of a sudden we get a phone call at the administration building at the park. They came out to get us one day and said, hey, there's a call for you guys. And, of course, we weren't there, and they said they're going to call back at such and such a time. So we made sure we were there. And lo and behold, it was the program director at NBC at What's My Line saying that they had heard about Sanders and myself and wanted to know if we were interested in coming down to the program as garbage men.
Hold on. That's the wonderful start of the story of how you got on What's My Line with your buddy Hal, right? We'll follow up on that. How about that, Russ, for a beginning?
That's a great beginning, Jim. Yes.
Just to get out of the cellar, he takes a job as a garbage collector. But that, there's more to this story than that, because there's a lot more about the ability of this man and Hal to do not only harmonize well, but to even write a song. This is The Times of Your Life. Our guest, Art Asquith, will be back after these messages.
Art, did you ever find out how the television people found out about you? Did somebody that had visited the park or something? Well, what was the connection between there and the people at the television?
Russ, it was one of the campers. It was one of the campers at the park that evidently sent a postcard in, and I can't tell you the lady's name. As I recall, it was a gal, and as somebody at the time that I knew quite well and saw twice a week.
Let's stick to What's My Line here. Go ahead, Art. So she sent the card in
and
telling What's My Line. There's a possibility here for a unique, two unique contestants, in other words.
That's
so
what?
Follow up the phone call bit.
Well, we got back to the ad building for the call, and what they wanted in essence was they wanted to know if we would fly down via American Airlines to the city and at their expense and be on their show. And we were, needless to say, very confident young men at that time, thinking that we had the whole world in our hands, and we declined and said, how about you send us the money? Because we have a new Oldsmobile at our disposal, and we'd like to drive down there. And all we could think of course, is having a new car in New York City and lots of money and all kinds of great things might happen. And they went along with it. Uh-huh. And so we did. We drove down and met some friends. Bob Burgles was one of the guys who, you know, Bob is in the coaching in this area for many years. And, met him down at the Metropole with another fellow, and the four of us had a good time. And the next morning, we went up to the studios.
Now, once you arrived at the studio, did they have a format that you had to follow? Did you have dress rehearsals? Did they give you certain questions you had to react to and answers, or how did that work?
It was really, I guess, very much on the up and up. We went into the green room, I guess, and sat down, and eventually Mr. Daly came through, and really about all he asked us was he wanted to make sure he pronounced our names right, and they had a little card letting him know that we were Art Asquith and Harold Sander from Little Valley, New York, and just a little information like that. We didn't have any idea what we were going to be asked, or we knew who the panel people were because we had seen the show ourselves many times, and they came in as we were in the green room and introduced themselves and walked past us to their position on the behind the table.
Can you name those panelists today, Arthur?
Oh, yeah. I'll never forget them. Fred Allen, the great Fred Allen, Dorothy Kilgallen, sharp as can be, Arlene Francis, and Bennett Cerf. And, of course, John Charles Daly was the moderator.
Now, we're ready to go. And was the show live at that time on television?
Yes, it was.
Live. So did you follow some other contestants, or were you the first on the program?
I think we were probably the third. I know that Lily Dashey was the guest that night.
Panelists.
You're right. Mm-hmm. And but I, as I recall, I think we were either second or last.
Now, we should tell the audience, I mean, I'm sure there's a number out there, remember that all this panel did was try to guess your occupation. What's my line? And they would ask questions trying to, of course, get the information from you to make the correct guess. Can you give us an idea of the questions they asked? Like Fred Allen.
Of course, Fred Allen was such a tremendous wit and such a funny fella. He can make something out of nothing. And of course, his little quips that I didn't really hear until I heard the tape later were hilarious. They were talking. The panel for such a sharp group of people got so goofed up. You know, it got to the point where, well, for instance, somebody was talking about can this be used in the home? And you know, is this an animal that we are familiar with? Does this animal have four legs? Sometimes. You mean you say sometimes it has four legs and sometimes it doesn't have four legs? Things like that. And Fred Allen, of course, jumped on everything. And by the time that people... They told us at the time, Jim, that they had the best audience response for that particular show that they'd had in that, as long as the show had run.
The best response after your appearance.
Yeah.
But that, Art, leading up to what you finally did as contestants on that show, you sang the garbage song.
Yeah.
Was that after they did not guess your profession?
And what happened was that when they went through the allotted time, and they didn't want to quit. It was funny, and the audience was raising Cain, and Charles Daly said, "Well, we're going to fold over all the cards because of the time left. The boys will now tell you what they do," and then we sang the song.
Well, what was the song, John? You remember?
Yeah. What we did, we actually, the song originally had, and if we were smart, we would have, John Charles Daly, I think, would have let us sing the whole thing. But I remember sitting there talking to Sanders about whether or not we should say to the program director we wanted to sing a song. We were afraid that somebody might say, "No, you guys can't do that." But John Charles Daly, of course, jumped on it. And there was three verses, but we only sang the last verse, which was the Jolly G-Men part. "We are your Jolly G-Men. We come around each day. We pick your garbage up for you and haul it right away. We bring a cheerful greeting to all you happy folks. We brighten up your little days with cloudy days with little songs and jokes. And now your cans are empty. The entertainment's through. It's time for us to move along. We bid you all adieu," and we sailed off over the horizon. And
So John didn't know that song at the time.
No.
But he did know your occupation when you started, didn't he?
Yeah.
But Arthur, what you said, the response, was there a thunderous applause from the audience?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there really was. You know, but the audience was that way throughout the whole bit. It seems like every time they asked us a question, and, of course, the audience knows what's going on. They know that we're garbage men. And for such a sharp panel to get so absolutely off the beaten path, it was hilarious. And they responded with a lot of laughter and whistles and so forth.
Art, back to the song. Where did the song come from?
It's something that I just kind of dreamed up. We had a lot of time.
Was it copyrighted?
No.
Well, you should have.
We started in 2 years ago. This here will make it three. "Our product is the very best, to that you will agree. Our customers have been A1. They make our job a breeze. What you think's tough is not so rough. So listen, will you please?" And we spelled out garbage by saying, "G is for the soft and juicy grapefruit. A is for the apple's rosy red. R is for the ripe old watermelon. B is for the beans that ain't been fed. A is for aroma. Take a whiff here. G is for the grandeur of it all. E is for extraordinary garbage, which we'll be picking up till fall." Then we swung into the G-Man part.
The G-Men, all because they love the Mills Brothers.
That's right.
You sang it to the tune of Mother, I understand. Like M is for...
Yeah, that that part was Mother. The G-Man song, what is that? Da 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 dee da 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 dee da 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 dee dee dee. I'm not sure what
that's a familiar tune.
What time of the day were you picking garbage and singing this under people's windows?
Well, we started, Russ. I'm sure to the chagrin of a few people, but most of them were happy campers that were glad that they were there and probably maybe bored at times, and so to have a couple of nuts come along, it probably brightened up their day a little bit.
We should inform the audience, Art, that they did not guess your profession, so you two picked up $50.
That's right. But they wouldn't pay us that $50 when we went back up to the studios until we sang that garbage song again. And then they handed us a check, and we were on our way.
How much was your expense check to get there?
I can't remember. No idea. No.
But what? How much was $50 a lot of money to you at that time?
Like $150 today, no question.
Wow.
You know, think about it. A Musketeer bar was 5 cents. A double-dip ice cream cone was a dime. Gas was 15 cents a gallon.
So you and Hal Sander had $25 a piece, or 50 bucks a piece?
50 a piece.
50 a piece. What did you What did you do with the money?
Probably spent it all at the Metropole that night. They also gave us a Bull of a watch, Jim. At that time, Bull of a was one of the sponsors. And
you still have that watch?
I still have the watch, and I was going to bring it to show it to you guys, and I typically forgot it.
Art Asquith, ladies and gentlemen, who appeared on What's My Line in 1955. Just think of the panelists again. Yeah, Bennett Cerf, Fred Allen, Dorothy Kilgallen, and Arlene Francis, and John Daly, who, of course, was a famous newscaster also, was there, and these men put on a show. Now we'll find out what was the response to that show on The Times of Your Life. We'll be back with Art Asquith after these messages.
Art, how many times have you been asked to sing that song after your appearance on What's My Line?
Well, quite a few times, I suppose, Russ. And sometimes if I was with my buddy Sanders, who, by the way, is in California now, and he comes back usually in the summer, and we get a chance to play around the golf. And if anybody knows, if we see anybody that was around back when we were in college and working at the park, why they always say, hey, sing the garbage song. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we do it just because it's kind of fun to do again.
How many years did you work at the park doing this?
4 years.
4 years?
3 years as a garbage man.
Mm-hmm. Great experience, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Good people.
Russ, he brought a few of the letters that arrived after that appearance. Let me read one.
The fan mail, are you saying?
Well, it came from What's My Line. It said, Dear Mr. Asquith, just received another inquiry about your song. At this rate, it probably would pay for you to have it published and sell these people copies, say for about $50 a piece.
Oh.
Ann Kaminsky. Who was she?
Just a gal that worked for the studio. We never met her, but I'm sure she was in the business department. And I don't really know. They kept forwarding those letters as they got them. Unfortunately, we weren't smart enough to pick up on it.
But you said earlier it was one of the best responses of any show that they had.
That's what they told us when we went up to the office to pick up our paycheck the next morning. And everybody up there, of course, is very tuned in to people like Jack O'Brien and the columnists and the people that write all about the shows and so forth. And they were all excited up there, saying that the response had been overwhelming and they were real good to us.
Didn't that lead to another appearance because of that appearance?
Yeah, the next year we went down to the Herb Shriner show, the Two for the Money show, and which was a repercussion of the success of this program. Herb Shriner's summer moderator was Sam Levinson, and that show, unfortunately, was all script, and so it wasn't off the cuff. It wasn't as much fun, and we actually had a chance to make some money there. But not being as sharp as we could have been, couldn't come up with the answers. I remember that the guy in front of us was the head of our Olympic Boxing Commission. And all the monies that he was to earn were going to be shoved into the Olympic Fund. And they asked this guy all kinds of questions about sports and things that we sat there saying, wow, I know the answer to that. Well, then it came our turn. And let me backtrack. My wife's mother was vice chairman of the Republican Committee in Cattaraugus County. And she gave us, it was the year of the presidential conventions, and she gave us all this material on the presidents, and we never bothered to look at it. You know, who would ask us about the presidents and blah, blah, blah. And the first question they hit us with, one guy had to give a president's last name, and the other guy had to give his middle name. And they gave us credit, I remember, for Harry S. Truman. And, of course, the other thing, if you recall in that show, they always gave you an example, and you could use their example as your first part of the answer. And I remember... the one that gave us the buzzer was they asked us for all the Republican presidents, and Sanders said Wilson, and the buzzer went. But we had a lot of fun again.
But were the requests so many that you thought of publishing the song and selling copies of it?
Jim, we just didn't think that way. You know, both of us were. I was into sports of all kinds, and I had an agenda that probably was, you know, never stop all night, all day, and Sanders was the same way. We had all kinds of things going on, and honestly, we didn't really take that very seriously.
All right, would you say now that it's out of the box, is it too late to do this with the song, to copyright it?
I don't really know, Russ. I've never even thought about that.
1955. I just, in case the audience has forgotten here, I just want to read, it's Two for the Money, New York, Madison Avenue, New York. It says, gentlemen, just think, two college graduates picking up garbage right after graduation from college. Your MC could really go to town with such a pair of contestants. It is unnatural for audience enjoyment. And by golly, these two ham and eggers have a garbage song that will really interest your TV fans. Who wrote this letter to get you an appearance on there? That
the
particular one.
Money?
Yeah.
That was Hal Sanders.
Hal Sanders. If I may, Russ, I'll give you the opportunity. Just read this particular verse again to the people about the garbage song.
G is for the soft and juicy grapefruit. A is for those apples rosy red. R is for the ripe old watermelon. B is for the beans that ain't been fed. A is for the aroma. Take a whiff here. G is for the grandeur of it all. E is for the extraordinary garbage. There's another line that goes with it, which we will be picking up till fall.
All right, I was just thinking, couldn't this become a theme song for all sanitation workers?
Sanitation Union of America. I think you ought to get it copyrighted, Art, even today.
By the G-Men.
The Jolly G-Men.
Do you know, I'm
no,
going to...
It's fitting that it was two for the money. There was two guys, and they were in
two
it for
the
money.
Arthur, I'm going to buy a paper doll to call my own, the Mills Brothers.
A doll that other fellows cannot see.
He, right. Mm-hmm. And then those flirty, flirty guys.
I could never have made it as a singer, Jim.
And here's what they further say in the letter, the garbage men's national anthem. And I think that's very fitting.
And I didn't even read that part, and there it is, the same thought. Art Asquith, we're going to pause again for a message or two here on the times of your life. This gentleman has had another life in addition to this one momentous appearance here on What's My Line. This guy could have followed many careers, really.
Oh, absolutely, Jim.
His athletic ability alone, if an injury didn't occur, we might be reading some of the records in the history books.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that, Jim, 100%.
Well, let's get to that part of his life also. Art Ask with our guest. We'll be back in just a moment.
Jim, here's another letter that's September 14th, 1955, and that'll mean something to you. The CBS Television in Madison Avenue, New York, addressed to Mr. Arthur Godfrey.
That's right. Somebody had written to Arthur Godfrey, Lillian Jose, suggesting that Arthur put these two men on his broadcast, all because of the G-Men song. Did you get a response to that, Arthur?
No, we didn't. No, we didn't. And we didn't follow it up. We just shoved the letter in our folder with the rest of them and kind of forgot all about it.
Art, we've got to... Rust is looking at a picture in front of him, and it's a beautifully framed picture. I want the audience to know there's another part of your life that's fascinating. The opportunity you've had in the world of sports. But here's a picture you're treasuring forever. Art Asquith in the middle of some giants in the world of sport. There you are, Russ. Just tell the audience who they are.
I don't know who they are, Jim. Who's that on the far right? It looks like a guy that played for the Yankees. Who would that be?
Joe DiMaggio. Yeah.
Standing next to him?
Johnny Unitas.
Pretty good quarterback, yeah. Isn't it? Huh? And then who's the other? Who's the guy in the middle? That guy I recognize.
That's a guy I can't remember. Art Asquith.
He looks like one of the garbage men.
But look at the giant next to him on his right. Gordie Howe of hockey fame. Next to him, Brooks Robinson.
Great third baseman.
They called him the garbage man. Didn't they call him? He'd scoop everything up, right? Didn't they call him the third base?
That's right.
Yeah. Did you sing the garbage song to Brooks Robinson?
No. I was too smart for that.
I think he would have loved it. Okay, and then next to him.
And who's the other great in that picture, Art? Way over on the left.
That's Willie Mays.
Willie Mays. Let me see that. Oh. In the back of that, this was taken in August of 1982. Tell us in detail the background of that picture.
I was invited down to a guest, a friend of mine, a fellow who originated from Faulkner, and we were invited down to his place, a good friend of mine from Castadena, Bill Simpson, who has since passed away, and we went down to Boston to visit him and play some golf and just have a good time. And while we were en route, our host received a call from a good friend of his who was a friend of Leo DeRocher's, but who also was instrumental in setting up a celebrity golf tournament down at Forest Gate Country Club in New Jersey. And he invited Will to come down to this annual celebrity tournament. He said, gee, he says, I'm sorry, I've got a couple of guests coming. The guy said, well, hey, it's a scramble tournament. You just need four guys, and you've got a team. He said, well, I can have my brother come down. And so that's what happened. His brother came down from the Adirondacks in his plane. We jumped in Will's plane, flew over the city and down into New Jersey and played in this 100-team tournament and won the tournament, won the longest drive, won closest to the pin, everything he had to offer. And
who had the longest drive?
I can't remember. I'm sure it wasn't me.
Yeah, who had the longest putter that was made, or who was first?
I can tell you, Bill Simpson was closest to the pin on that one, but the guy who ran the tournament, was instrumental for us going down there, pleaded with us to my host, saying that we had to give up something because there was big bucks being spent by these people that were buying all these fast foods. Ogden Foods serviced the Astrodome and places like Rich Stadium, and they spent big dollars. And of course, we were kind of freeloaders, just enjoying ourselves.
Well, it only seems practical to me that for Ogden Foods to sponsor, that they needed to have a garbage man there.
That's true, Russ.
They needed.
Ah, what a story! What
so
a
after
wonder-
the tournament, Jim, we got together with these guys in a suite, and rubbed elbows and had a lot of nice conversations, and this picture and a autographed ball was a result of that.
Art, if we can go back to that What's My Line appearance with those very special panelists, did you get to chat with them afterwards on a personal one-to-one basis or anything? Fred Allen and Dorothy Kilgallen and Darlene Francis and Bennett Cerf?
As you might imagine, the only one that really stuck around was Fred Allen, and we did make some small talk with him, and I can't remember a whole lot about it except that he was very congenial and, you know, shook hands and made some quips about the small towns and blah, 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 that type of thing. The other guys were kind of a hurry, and they disappeared.
Well, an unforgettable moment for you, right, Arthur?
Absolutely.
It's amazing. Knew Art all these years, but never knew he was, number one, never knew he was a garbage man, never knew he could sing, never knew he was on that program.
You know what? If Art will take that scrapbook off that table, take it off there, Art, and put the microphone down close to that table there, and I want you to listen to him play the drums on the table. Listen to Art play.
I'll hold a scrapbook.
And Russ is going to hold a scrapbook. Arthur did this for us recently on the trip to Notre Dame with other wonderful men. Mm. And he played. Did you want to be a drummer at one time, Art?
Oh.
Just get that for a moment. How you like that, Russ?
I didn't know that career either, Arthur.
I'd forgotten you wanted to make sure you could tape as many of those wonderful bands as you could. Did you want to be a musician?
There was a time that I was really into music, certainly as a drummer, and I carried a union card when I was in college and used to play some dance jobs, went up on the hill of Cornell, and I played in the local Elks Club and Legion Club back in Salamanca, and a few municipal dances at the Little Valley Fire Hall and places like that. But yeah, I had a love for it.
But how did you get in your baseball career? Take us a little bit through your baseball career. Playing in Olean, the Yankee uniform on, and all of those good years, and your years back when you come back here to play in the semi-pro league. Take us a little bit through that.
Well, I had my first introduction to real good baseball probably when I was playing with the Heidelberg Hawks over in Germany, and we were involved in the GI World Series in 1952, and I was one of the lucky ones to get a start there, and I had pretty good results, and I had an opportunity then to sign with the Cardinals, and had a manager who told me that I shouldn't do that, that perhaps I should wait, because we were both coming back to the States about the same time, that he would set me up when we got back here, and so I opted to do that and came back and didn't hear anything from him, and I was just getting ready to take a trip to Florida when the phone rang and informed me that I was supposed to report to spring training with the Yankees down at Oloki Beach, Maryland, because they were already on the way back up, and if I was interested, and of course I was, and so I went down there and eventually ended up in Olean and played with guys like Bobby Richardson and Lou Johnson and a bunch of great ball players. If I, in retrospect, as I look back, maybe if I had stayed away from the mound, because I could run and I had a good arm and I was a decent hitter, but I could throw hard, and so that's why I became a pitcher. But as you all know, you just can't throw the ball by good hitters very long. You have to be smarter than that, and with change-ups and curveballs, et cetera, and everybody in the ball club could throw a better curveball than I could. And eventually, of course, my arm just wouldn't hold up to to that kind of abuse, and I had trouble with it, and really that. And I was, I'd just gone transfer from Western Illinois into Ithaca College, and by that time I was really pretty well squared away in terms of what I wanted to do when I got out, and I was kind of anxious to get on with my professional physical education career, and so I opted not even go back to spring training that next year, that was kind of the end of my, had a lot of fun, met a lot of great people, and probably learned more inside baseball, which was to, help me when I coached baseball, than I would had I not had that experience. I came back to Casadega and got involved with the Jamestown Bombers with Joe Nagel, and Raj Dubois and all that bunch. Great, great, great bunch of guys. And very quick after that, I got involved with Jack Fulford and Jim Hannon and Dave Wilcox and Al Barber and just a great, great group of athletes and baseball players from the Jamestown area. And
did you go to Wichita, Kansas?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't. I heard all about those trips and those guys. I can understand why they had such many great athletes down here that it had to happen.
You talk about a great arm, and you mentioned Al Barber.
Oh, man.
Unbelievable.
He used to look for me, Russ, when we went down there to warm up, and he threw a shot put.
Yes.
I used to hate to see him come. He's the only guy I ever knew, Russ, that hit a softball out of a municipal stadium.
Municipal stadium, yes. Over the left field fence.
Yeah.
The left center field in there.
But, Art, you haven't gotten to the fact that you went into physical education, teacher. And you were how many years at Casadega Valley?
35. That was probably the smartest decision I ever made. I was from a small town, And moving into the Castaic Valley system was probably one of the best things I ever did, because those kids I could relate with. They were very, very enthusiastic and gung-ho. They appreciated lots of little things. I had it made because I had the elementary phys ed program, and those kids were wonderful, excited, and I had my relationship with athletes as I coached. I helped Joe with football for several years. I had the varsity baseball team, the varsity basketball team. So I had my relationship with the older kids, too. And Castaic Valley's always had the kind of kid that that I grew up around, and kids that played hard, worked hard, appreciated things. And it was just a great experience for me.
Art, I see on your shirt, Chautauqua Golf Club staff. What's that mean?
Well, I'm not sure they consider me much of a part of the staff up there.
You're one of the G-men.
I've been, first of all, I was a member up there, Russ, for about 25 years before I went to work as the cup setter. And but that's been a great experience for me, because obviously I play all the golf I want to play. It's a job that, you know, you feel like you can be responsible.
Yeah, but my problem is you don't make the hole, you know, big enough.
I've been accused of missing the green several times.
What's the technology of the hole setter? Do you pick every day on each green where you're going to put the hole, or is there an exact measurement to that, exact science, or what?
Well, Russ, there's several things. Number one, I had no experience other than I was a great second guesser like you and Jim and everybody else as a golfer. And I always complained about where the holes were cut and so forth. But I found out when I took the job that there's a couple of things you have to be aware of. Number one, the health of the green is vital. You've got to put it in a place where added abuse isn't going to raise Cain with the green. You try to make it a fair putt, and if you can, make it as level certainly in a 3-foot radius as you can. However, at Chautauqua, I think of holes like number 11, number 12, number 17. You can't find a level spot on the whole green. So wherever you put it, you're going to be wrong.
Now, really be honest. Have you ever gone away from a green after setting it and just think to yourself, gotcha?
Oh, yeah. 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 But I have to tell you that it's all about keeping the game interesting as well as protecting the green. And I just came up with a little scheme. Every course uses its own scheme. We deal in thirds, and we deal in the front third, middle third, and the back third, and we move it anywhere we want to within that third. And that way it protects the green, makes it interesting, and you just about have to do that to protect the green.
And how about hole after hole? Hole number one, hole number two, and number three? Do you kind of vary where you put it in the green, or do you always have a pattern to that? I mean, it's hole one, it might be left. Hole two, it might be right.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So it makes it interesting to the putter.
Let me just take you on back to 1955. We've mentioned your partner, Hal Sander. Bring us up to date on his life.
Hal was a very talented fella. At one time, he was running around the country representing General Motors and working with high school students, because he just had that great personality. And automotive design was his topic, as I recall. Then he went into teaching. He at one time he was selling Bibles on film. He got into the insurance business, and that's what he retired from. At present, he just plays golf twice a week and does a little traveling here and there.
Where's he live today?
And he's gonna really give me the business about this. He's in California, Jim.
Have you had reunions?
I see him about once or twice a year, if I'm lucky, just because he comes back. He has relatives in Little Valley, and being our hometown, I get down there occasionally, and he'll come to my house, but we try to get to see each other all we can.
And just, you know, for sheer nonsense here, in a sense, when you get together, do you sing the G-Man song?
You know, we always do. We always do, because it's just one of those great times that we'll never forget. And we just had a whole lot of fun with it.
Art, I'm going to ask if you'll do this me a favor. You were reciting the song. Can you sing it?
We are your jolly G-men. We come around each day. We pick your garbage up for you and haul it right away. We bring a cheerful greeting to all you happy folks. We brighten up your cloudy days with little songs and jokes. And now your cans are empty, the entertainment's through. It's time for us to move along. We bid you all adieu.
How about spelling it?
G is for the soft and juicy grapefruit. A is for the apples, rosy red. R is for the ripe old watermelon. B is for the beans that ain't been fed. A is for aroma, take a whiff here. G is for the grandeur of it all. E's for extraordinary garbage, which we'll be picking up till fall.
Russ, let's give him a round of applause, Russ. Ladies and gentlemen, our guest, Art Asquith.